the English side does, where you can also see what they do on air for an hour on TV. And I believe you can get some on YouTube, if I'm not mistaken.
But how often is it going to be like a poolside party? You know, is it a poolside? Is it every week? Is it or twice a week or every once a year? You know, it just seems like it's all poolside parties.
Oh, the parties at the mansion?
I don't know. Is it the mansion? It's not just Hefner's mansion now, is it? There's other people doing this stuff, but it's like a poolside party where everybody goes to the beach and just hang out and have a drink and dance and
DJ.
Yeah, it's called the Verano, and that's where everybody has party. That's where they have like parties in the summer. And there's a lot of playmates and a lot of famous people that attend these parties. And we try to do that for the radio side, so we also bring on playmates. So if you go to my studios in the morning when we're broadcasting, there's playmates. It makes you feel like you're part of the mansion.
And is that part of the subscription where you subscribe to your site and stuff?
Yes, you can go on playboyradio.com and you'll find the podcast there.
Is your show the same? You can only listen to it if you're a subscribed member, or
you don't have. It's free right now because we're podcasting it, so it's free, and you can find it on playboyradio.com.
How long have you been doing it?
I have over a year now with Playboy Radio, but I've started doing interns as far as the radio industry. But with Playboy, I've been on air for over a year now.
He used to have on his show, like years ago in the late 60s, on his TV show, he'd have a lot of musical guests. Do you have musical guests on your show?
Yes. You remember his show when he had it on TV and it was black and white?
Yeah, I saw a Deep Purple thing. Or this one was in color, but it was like in the late 60s, or 1968. It was back in the day for sure.
Exactly. We do the same thing. We also bring on guests. The great thing about our show is that being that we're Playboy, we can cover anything from sports to artists to athletes. We really have the liberty to bring on whomever
culture,
we like.
Culture.
So we definitely cover a lot of artists, athletes, movies, just a little bit of everything.
Nice.
Yeah.
And are you girls on social media? Do you do stuff like that? Or do you have people to do that for you?
I'm doing my own social media for now. I go under Nadia, which is my name, and then Latica, which means Costa Rican in Spanish. So it's
Latica.
Latica.
Are you on Keek? Are you on this new site called Keek? You know, K-E-E-K?
You know, you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. I'm not on Keek.
Hey, let me just...
You've heard of Keek,
Dave, yes, I definitely have. It's where you upload videos.
Yeah, Dave.
Yes. What?
Guess who funded Keek?
Well on Keek.
Guess who funded Keek?
Nelson.
Keek is the new instant fucking something. You know, you post, Kardashians put their...
You post videos up.
You put quick videos. It's Facebook with videos, but sure. Twitter, the Twitter of videos, right, guys?
Correct.
Yeah. And so guess who invested in it?
Who?
Nelson Thal Jr. and his brother.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, old colleague's sons are the guys funding that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're out of Toronto, and their father and grandfather own the Toronto Star, the major newspaper in Canada.
I would love to do something with them in Playboy. That would be great.
Yeah, get on Keek, because it's very quick. You'll get millions of followers, you know, you get millions of followers in about 2 months on Keek.
Really? Really?
Yeah, because of your age group as well. So statistically, I think it's between, like, 17 and 23 or 24. So it's just the age group is perfect, you know.
Yeah, this could be Nelson Thal Jr.'s first successful investment, Dave.
Neat, really, eh? So who invented that application or whatever it is you'd call it?
Well, I don't know who did it, but they approached Nelson Jr. and all them, and they agreed to invest in it.
Which is the one that they've recently made where you send out like a photo of your friend or whatever and it only exists for so long and then it expires and it no longer is there?
I don't know that.
That's the verification process, Dave, on Keek. Yeah, you send it, you know, like you get this tick on Twitter where you're verified. So everybody were complaining, saying, oh, I can't get verified, even though whether they're a celebrity or not, they don't get verified. But on Keek, you can get verified within a week or within a day of joining, you know, if you go about.
Okay,
you've got to take
for
a
these details. Forget it.
Picture of yourself.
Yeah. Bob's looking for larger patterns.
Yeah, bigger patterns, Robert. Where's the mute? I got to mute Robert. Don't take it personally, but everybody's going to be muted when I play this. Okay, so here's what.
Well done, girls. Anyway.
And
we're going to listen to the Evergreens, and then these guys are going to respond and
they don't have to respond.
The optional response, optional.
Jermaine would be interested in this. She's more informed of my history than the other her sisters, and so Jermaine is the first person I'm targeting these to, and they follow what Jermaine does, so they're all in on it now.
Jermaine is our leader.
That's
not true. That's not true. I will not be held responsible for that.
We believe.
Jermaine is our God.
We believe in Jermaine. We believe in our leader.
Jermaine. The RNA code.
Yeah, the RNA code. Jermaine carries a secret code.
Is this Jermaine the fashion representative? Jermaine, are you the fashion rep? Have you been on the show for about 2 years now and you talk about fashion?
Yeah, that's who Jermaine is, yes.
Oh, wow. Brilliant.
Robert's always a little slow.
I have resonated with you before on the radio in some kind of form or another. I'm not sure if I actually spoke to you directly, but that's great. Your sisters are wicked. It's brilliant.
Thank you. I like you, Rob.
Thank you.
Another
like you, Rob. I was listening to Howard Stern last week as well, so I've been tuning into him, and it's...
All participants are now muted.
Now listen, I am playing you from January 18th, 1995, and this is an hour and 20 minutes. I've already played half of it, just to show you where it starts off. If you've heard in the Vedic Asian India, the writings, the Vayanas, the UFOs in the Vedic scriptures. And then there's the UFOs in the Egyptian culture. So I start off with the Indian culture, Egyptian, and we move through to Isis and Osiris and the same famous electric battery in the pyramids. We move down to China, get up the Industrial Revolution. I've done all that, and I'm not sure where we tune in, but coming up is incredible categories about the Mayans, which you guys, I guess, are related to. And I will play the next 10 minutes and then stop, and we'll see what you think of this. But it's a very exciting, amazing topics. And now I'm going to put, which one are you guys? Which one are they? Are you Skype? Oh, no, here it is. Okay, that's the Renner sisters right here, right? Speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I've muted everybody else. Jermaine, are you guys? Do you have Incan and Mayan and Aztec in you? Does that work, or is it you come from Europe? How does that work over down in Costa Rica?
I have no idea because their great grandpa's German.
Oh, that's right. So you're more European.
I don't know.
Your mother's too blasé to bother figure out where she came from, so no help there.
She never told us.
All right, well, this may prompt it. So I'm going to, I just wanted to say that, so I'm going to start the recording, and it's 6:09, so we'll go to 6:20, and I hope you guys can sit still and pay attention. It's hard. I know it's hard to, do your texting while this is, you can probably tolerate if you're texting to your friends and all that, right? We'll accept that. All right? That'll keep
you'll
you
mute
calm.
Us, right?
Yes, I'm going to mute you because I don't want the the recording be dirtied by sounds and farts and burps, you know. So here we go. put that here, and I check the sound connection. That's in the correct position. Just a second. I'm moving along. There it is. Sound is in the right position. What are you laughing at, Carol? You know what, Carolyn? She's not even paying attention. She's watching some TV show. She's such a little girl. She has no attention. She can't hang out very long. She's got to start watching TV. So that's sort of funny. All right, here we go. We got the sound thing ready to go. Listen to her. Listen, Mickey, you heard her laughing. I got to go over and see what she's laughing at. Veep. She used to love Veep. What are you?
I'm doing a cheeve on here. I stopped the cell phone practice.
So you're listening to old shows?
No, I'm listening to you, but delayed a minute.
Oh, Karen's laughing at us, but she's delayed by a minute. Okay, here we go. And I don't know where we are on the topic. I just stopped it late last night. So here we go, and we'll see, and you'll find it amazing. This is a very intelligent voice.
Maybe it is. It would rather is. But understand, the point is that that's recent.
Okay, just that is the evergreens talking, that voice. And you'll hear me asking questions, and Michael Blake Reed, who the voice is coming through, his wife, Ellie, might be in there, and maybe even Carol's in there, I don't know which. So, just want to clarify, that's the voice. What the hell, Carol's laughing. What was said funny a minute ago? Anybody know?
No.
I mean, she's weird. Okay. Maybe she's laughing at what I just said. Okay, here we go.
A competing culture. And that is when, if you would say, as we said, whenever there is an invasion, a culture will collapse, and the Mayan culture collapsed.
And that was, what was the date on that, when the Mayan culture collapsed?
Approximately through the 1200s.
Isn't that before?
I'm following that. And then I said, this is the Spanish invasion.
Well, Spanish invasion is in the 1490, Columbus, 1492.
In those areas, yes. And with all others. But understand, the point is that that's recent. But the prior collapse, that was another matter.
In 1100 and 1200.
In 1100 and 1200. And what collapses? Understand that a society slowly, slowly shakes itself apart because of its rigidities. Now, when there was the collapse, approximately 3,000 years before the coming of the Nazarene, from which there was a little recovery, again, understand that a society can repudiate certain things. It can repudiate technologies when it is of a certain size and a certain decision. It can decide that these things will not be done.
And survive.
The creation of stone, the hardening of stone, these things were considered to be useful if they were done to build a priestly, once again, as far as through Peru and through parts of Chile and to the northward, it was acceptable to build if it had a religious aspect to it. So therefore, if it was religious, then you could use these techniques. If you use these same techniques on other areas, it was verboten, forbidden. You were playing with forces and energies that you best dare not.
Did the Mayan society, when you studied the 1200 AD period, was it invaded by Europeans before Columbus?
Not invaded, but there were those that came. Basically, there were certain Scandinavians that visited the area. They were the most sea-like race at that time. And there were stories of those that came, saw, and left.
That would be the aliens, the Boolean.
Now, these were those from Scandinavian countries that had traveled extensively. Most of the Scandinavian explorers never made it back. They died.
Never made it back to home.
Never made it back to home. They died. So therefore, much of this story not continued, but there are, and if you take that, you'll find that there are stories of different people being there. Now, those that came by boats, you'll see the stories will say they came by sea, but those that say they came by boats and where sea is not mentioned, there are the Bootians. They came by boats.
Right. But there was an invasion that destroyed the Mayans before the Spanish destroyed the Mayans.
Yes. And there was a recovery.
After the... Who were they? The Scandinavians?
No, these were various tribal aspects. Not so destroyed, but they were absorbed, but it got to the thrust of the Mayans themselves.
Right. Now, did the Mayans think the Scandinavians were gods?
Those who came in contact with them, yes.
Yes, and then they thought the Spanish were gods.
Yes.
All right, I understand.
And the basic precept is that the gods are not concerned with the wherewithal of man.
Yeah, and the Vikings were not concerned with the Mayan. Came, did not disturb, and left, exactly. Like the gods.
Exactly.
So the Spanish confused everything.
Yes, but realize where the precept began. There was no interest in cannibalism. There was no interest.
Right, so the Spanish were not coming to give something to the Mayans, they were coming to take.
Exactly.
Which caused confusion.
Exactly.
Can we pause a second, please?
Okay, so what you're hearing is these are originally a cassette, a 90-minute cassette, so that's the first 45 minutes, and then... And we just move it down a bit and digitize. It's got near the second 45 minutes or less, and it's a digitized thing. Now, this pulsing thing, some of my discs pulse. So can you guys, let's see, where are you? Let's see. Yes, you're still. Can you guys make out what's being said?
Some other dates from the first Mysteries of History.
Oh, damn.
When was the Easter Island stat?
Okay. Can you guys make out what's being said?
I kind of had a hard time understanding.
Right. The pulsing happens on some of the discs as I get further into this. I can't stop it. It's sort of a glitch. So I will just play a little more. I don't know if it's that pleasant, but it is sort of understandable. What do you? I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear a little more, Jermaine?
And they came and they
yeah, I can hear some more.
Spanish.
Oh.
Yeah, what they're talking about is the Spanish coming to the Mayans, and the mm-hmm. Vikings came, and when the Mayans know there are gods, for example, in their literature where it says boats came, but they don't mention the boats in the sea, that's the Boodians from out there in space, outer space.
The session is clear, but it's just that... That tone of the voice, if you're not used to hearing it.
That's what it is. Yes.
But it is clear. It's nothing you can do. It's not the recording. It's just that evergreen sound that it takes a while to get used to.
Right. Okay. You're not going to fully get it, and so you're just getting a general effect. And so the topic at this point is the Spanish, the Mayans understood that when the gods came, the gods did not care about them. And they would just go about their business. The Spanish acted weird. The Spanish came to get gold, and the Mayans thought they were gods, but the Spanish got all involved with taking the gold and caused chaos because they were acting concerned about the Mayans, and the gods don't. So that's what was just being said. And then I'm gonna give you some of the titles just so you could be familiar. So what's coming up is Easter Island. I think we're right at the Easter Island statues. And then we go into the Hunas, which Greg, that voice you just heard, he studied the Hunas in the Hawaiian, they were the Hawaiian priests. Then we're going to get into Stonehenge and Atlantis, then the Great Mathematique, then satellites, and then 20th century stuff. So I don't know how far we go, but that's what's coming up, Easter Island. So I'm going to rewind it slightly for the recording because it slipped into the next part before I was ready. Okay, so move it back.
Yeah, it's true what the guy said. It's because you're not used to it. Like, at first I'm like, wait, what am I listening to? It sounds like a different language. How do I know what they're saying?
I heard that.
Oh.
The Conspiring Sisters. Okay, I'll cut that off. Everybody's cut off. All right, here we go. Hopefully you get the gist of it. It's coming up. It'll start any second. It's in the gap between the cassettes. Still coming. Go.
Please continue.
All right, let's move on to some other dates from the first Mysteries of History. When was the Easter Island statues built? What's the date on that?
They were built between 500 and 700 A.D.
And they were the builders were influenced by the Hunas in Hawaii or Polynesia?
Yes, the Polynesian. Because of what, not what they represent, but for what they do.
Right, now, so the Hunas understood resonance?
Yes.
In their unique way?
Yes.
Did they get it from the Atlanteans, or they developed it in their own society?
No, that it developed independently.
And they developed that how many years before 500 A.D.?
Approximately, because there's not a hard and fast line on this, approximately the time of the Nazarene himself.
All right. When did the, in listening to the great mathematique, there were many circular Stonehenge structures built.
Yes.
When were they built? What years were they? Because Stonehenge itself was completed in 3210, maybe. When were the other ones that were, I assume, around before built by the Atlanteans?
Before that.
And before 10,000, before they collapsed.
Before they collapsed, yes.
I see. So what happens between 10,000 when the Atlanteans collapse and 3210 BC when Stonehenge is made? What are there stones left, so to speak?
They lost the instruction manual, would be the facetious answer. Because realize that these were built and would appear that there is very strong religious aspect, but in actuality, though it was done by a priestly caste.
Which one? This is post-Atlantean.
Post-Atlantean. They were, because the theory was known, the mathematical theory was known, it became time element. It became something by which time could be accurately measured. Accurately. Now,
that's not how the Atlanteans used them.
Oh, the Atlanteans used them for time. They used them for resonance, yes. But also there was the time aspect to them.
But the priests, the post-Atlanteans concentrated on the time aspect in a more limited way.
Yes.
But still dealing with cycles and the great mathematics.
Yes. You see,
and there were many circles left that we don't see now. Many stone circles like Stonehenge that the priests used.
Yes. What is interesting is that satellite tomography is turning up more and more of these.
Yes.
And you find that as a means of time, they're surprisingly accurate within the context that they were to be used. Well, but it was the loss of the understanding of the advanced mathematics.
Which included resonance, I imagine.
It did. did indeed.
So that the great mathematics say from 8,000 B.C. to 3,000 B.C., it did not have the resonance of the Atlantic knowledge, but it did have the great mathematic in terms of time cycles.
Yes. Right. Understand, there are several concepts that we've brought up here. One is that a society must, if it is to maintain itself under the belief of a continuity, it must repudiate that which would change the continuity of itself. The second is that a society can repudiate something because society sees no need for it.
Yes. This seems to be a common characteristic, an archetypal characteristic of society for thousands of years, different societies around the world.
Exactly.
This is like priestly religious society, so to speak.
Given the authority to maintain. Now, what is happening in this century is different than any other century, because this is where repudiation means a return to a stability, but a stability that cannot withstand invention. So therefore you will have the fundamentalists who will try to repudiate, but in doing so sign their death knell.
Right, because the change in the 20th century is that we now want change. We want a new technology.
But there's no place to hide. There's no place to hide from technology. Not now.
Yes.
You cannot put up a border because the technology disregards the border.
And this is... You were going to say?
You can jam radio signals. But some get through.
Right, so this, the characteristics of the 20th century is very radical and new compared to the drift of most societies for thousands of years, going back, say, 150 years ago and then back. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly. Now, with this society that is being built at this present time, it reaches a point where it embraces innovation.
Have we got that yet?
Not completely.
Fusion energy will be the breakthrough.
One of the breakthroughs. But the point is, at this particular time, you'll still see that some societies are trying to repudiate invention.
Yes.
Because it prevents the society from maintaining itself in the manner in which the participants or the rulers of this believe there should be as a continuity. And that what is being shattered from their perspective is the continuity of the society. Now, let's go back, because this is extremely important. In the Bible itself, it's very important to note the lineage of people. That if a person is of the house of David, then there is a lineage to show authority. That so-and-so begat so-and-so, and so begat so-and-so. So the line of authority is passed from individual to individual.
Yes.
That if you are a Kohen, if you are of the priestly class, then you are able to do this, which other people who do not have the same name cannot do. With the introduction of paper came the spreading of knowledge to those that did not have the knowledge before, and that was the first upset of the apple cart.
That's 500 years ago.
Yes. Now, the son of a sailor can become an electrician. How? Go to school. Read a book. Get a teacher. Does not have to have the lineage authority to be an electrician.
Right.
Or a sailor. The electrician's son can go to sea. So there is a breakdown of lineage authority. The remnants of lineage authority, basically tribal, are shifting. In Saudi Arabia, if you are not a member of the Saudi family, then you do not have power. Power is promulgated through family lineage. So therefore, understand what fundamentalism is saying. Fundamentalism is saying family lineage is important. It must be maintained.
Family values.
Family values. Now, the West is saying if the sailor's son wants to become an electrician and the electrician's daughter wants to become a doctor, then that's acceptable. You're not bound by lineage.
The West is saying this in general.
Indeed it is. Who was Clinton's father? Notice that his father did not stay on the scene very long. The person who raised him and who Clinton took his name is not his genealogical, biological father. But he carries the name Clinton, but he can be president. A certain society cannot become that high office because he does not have the lineage. So if you take a look at what the Gutenberg Revolution was the breakdown of lineage. Now do you see why communications is feared by those who express the desire for the continuance of lineage?
Yeah, like in Iran.
Breaks down lineage.
Iran wanted to stop the recent satellite dishes, I think.
Yes, China also.
Right.
But who is to rule China upon Deng's death within a few weeks? What then?
Yes. Is your timing accurate on that when you say
it? It is, yes.
Can you see him almost dying right now?
He is.
Yes.
In a coma at the present time. Now, who took over after Kim Song's death? In North Korea.
The sun.
Ah. But
he feels controlled palace, prisoner in a palace, is what a recent reading said.
Yes. No, point is, they need him. Why do they need him? Because he's lineage.
Right.
When the Sun King dies, who then is in the Mickey House in Japan?
Mm.
You see?
So, at a certain level, Clinton is a revolutionary leader, his image, because he's not of the lineage reality. He's,
exactly.
There's a subconscious. Is that part of the fundamentalist or the right-wing discuss with Clinton? There's some kind of a lack of family value implied about Clinton's lineage?
Of course it is.
Right. But that's not his fault. So he's acting out a revolution on a level he's not aware of.
Exactly. Now, if you take the entire America, North America particularly Canada and the United States, there has been that melting pot. So even the fundamentalist view in North America is a very much watered down version
compared to the Arabians.
Exactly.
Yes.
But you see where it is. If you would have gods come from the sky, gods have their own lineage, God to God. You see? So there is no necessity to discuss the lineage of God. But the recognition of God is a lineage aspect.
Right. Is Marsh McLuhan lurking about and listening to this dialogue?
Obviously, yes.
He's not putting that much input into it, I don't think, but
he's putting in some.
I mean, he's interested in how it develops.
Oh, isn't he? Because it's his concept that the lineage importance in fundamentalism and the breakdown of it, that's his concept.
He put that part in there?
Yes, he did.
Was he aware of that when he was alive?
No. It's more now he can see it, how lineage is the fighting point that is going to resist those hot mediums. That is added by him directly.
Yes.
They can control the cool mediums, but they cannot control the hot mediums.
which are technological change agents on the hardware level.
Exactly.
Which is what Lyndon LaRouche talks about. Would Marshall agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, and does Marshall like the way I've organized my book, Bad at Communion, with Bob Dobbs, where I have what I call archetypal schools of thought and perception? LaRouche representing one thing, McLuhan representing another style, William Thompson and Croker and myself.
Yes.
So you appreciate that as a new form of poem like The Wasteland?
Yes.
Like Eliot's Wasteland?
Yes.
Can I be proud of it as a new a presentation in our mixed media cultural world instead of like The Wasteland presenting cultural object archetypes? I'm presenting thought archetypes, a more finer, I would assume, thought archetypes.
Yes.
In my collage. That is a new yes. revolution in poetry, wouldn't you say?
It is, because it's nonlinear.
Yes, and it's showing parallel forces from our legacy that are mixing it up today.
Yes.
And so therefore his view is a bit different from LaRouche when he was alive.
Yes. Because, as you point out, the turbulence is predictable, even to the individual flow of turbulence. But and the turbulence of turbulence is there. But what you point out and wish to add is which one is going to be the most successful? If there is going to be a clash between the two, which one is going to be the most successful?
Well, the hot media LaRouche archetype will upset the apparent advantage that cool media have today.
Yes.
So LaRouche will be more successful than Marshall's view, even though.
But Marshall says where lineage based society meets non lineage based society, which one is going to be the most successful?
Right. Could we say that LaRouche himself acts out a kind of lineage patriarchal attitude?
Yes.
And so it paradoxically flips then, that Marshall, representing, I suppose, the non-lineage view, wins out on that level.
Yes, it does.
So they're both a half, Marshall and LaRouche are both a half-truth that meet each other, crossover, and become a tetrad.
Almost, because what is being said is that the forces can be described, the input, hot and cold, can be delineated, that is still... What is the resultant environment where it's created? Does it mean that a starship would have a captain?
I would say it doesn't mean that. If you would have the function of captain, but anybody's eligible.
That is good.
Okay, I will bring you in. Hopefully everybody's there. Went a little long.
All participants are now unmuted.
Jermaine and company, any comment? Were you able to make out any of it?
Yeah.
What do you think, Jermaine?
We're just getting to it, though, about the lineage and stuff. You know, it's interesting because me and my sisters were just talking. We don't really know our lineage because it's so mixed. But it got... along, I feel like that's the case with a lot of in the future now, kids being born and being so mixed, it's hard to track your lineage.
Right. And we were talking about your lineage half an hour ago, right?
Yeah.
And then this,
and we don't know.
I didn't know this was going to be the lineage point, but it's interesting. It's almost not important to find out what your lineage is in the changing world.
Yeah.
You guys can use that as a plug. We do not know our lineage. You Kardashians, you are neurotic about your lineage.
And Bob, I've heard the Evergreens talk many times about what would be in the future is that people wouldn't be saying, oh, I'm English or I'm from England. If they had moved to another country, they would then be identifying with that country. And
right.
No longer using that heritage thing, I don't know, 50, 100 years from now. They would always identify with the place they were at and got rid of that whole concept of heritage.
And then the bureaucracy would they have to get a national ID card? You know, Carol and I, as Canadians, have a green card. But would we, if we could say we're Americans, would we have to register as Americans? That would be right. The glitch would be how much bureaucracy required to be this mobile and adopt right. the identity of wherever you went.
Yeah, the identity would be, oh, I'm from Boston, even though I was Canadian.
Yeah.
I live in Boston. Mm-hmm. I associate with Boston. And the other interesting thing that the Evergreen said would come in the future is that in America now, of course, you have to be born in America to be the president. The Evergreen said that's going out the door. They will want whoever the best person is. And it could be Swiss. They will change the law for that. And I think it was brought up at the time because of Schwarzenegger. He's not born in this country. I think he's German or he's Austrian.
Right.
And they said, what about Schwarzenegger? What if he ended up being the potentially best president for the country? And now you won't allow it. That's interesting.
Yeah, so...
coming in the future.
So Clinton is the first confusion, breaks it up a bit. Then his reaction, but Obama, nobody knows where he's from. His real mission as an image is to break up the lineage pattern.
Very good. Yes, agreed.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really interesting, too, because that's something that we grew up talking about. I mean, when we were growing up, it was kind of hard to fit in when coming to America because our last name is Renner, and it's German. Our names are really different. We were born in Costa Rica, but we have Europe and Latin background, and we kind of don't know exactly where we come from. It's just so mixed that it doesn't even make sense. We don't know what we are, so we would be like, we're just whatever we are here. What does it matter where we're from, what lineage, because it just growing up never made sense to us because we never knew where we came from.
And it kind of was hard, at least like for myself, to kind of identify with the other kids at school to kind of like fit in.
You said you couldn't? What did you just say?
I had a hard time trying to fit in, trying to figure out what I was, because even like our Spanish is different compared to like other like the other accents in Spanish. So it's just kind of difficult to fit in and try to explain why I was so different, but I still spoke Spanish.
But now that's the future. Now these kids that are being born, everybody now is mixed. So everyone's like, you can't trace, everyone's so mixed, and it keeps on getting more mixed.
Yeah, you guys are going to be very charismatic. McLuhan defined charisma as looking like a lot of other people. So when it was a white America 50 years ago, some guy, Kennedy, looked like a lot of people you might like to know. You guys are going to look like a lot of lineages. You got a German name, speak Spanish, you look like Mayor Bridget Bardot. No one's going to figure out what that'll be your charisma. You look like not a lot of other people. You look like a lot of other lineages.
Yeah.
What?
We look like everyone.
You look like everyone, and that's charisma, but a new level of charisma. You know, you can look like a lot of white people, but you guys look like a lot of German, French, Costa Rican, Mexican, Italian, Eskimos, Indians, fucking Estonians, Lithuanians, Chinese. You got it all in there.
Everything. Black. We got black.
Yeah, you black, man. You're black and proud.
We got it all.
Yes.
My daddy, I got black.
Yeah. So, Greg, I think you should invest in these people, Greg.
The one thing I regret about my kids not growing up in Ontario or going to school is that they would be in a classroom with probably 15 ethnicities.
Right.
I mean, Ontario schools are just incredible melting pots of every single country represented. I mean, when Canada's idea of helping a third world country, what they do in Canada is they let 50,000 people immigrate.
Yeah.
They don't send money. They send, and you can go to Toronto and the guy will say, yeah, this area is from Estonia. You know, this three blocks here, 10,000 Estonians live in here. So they're all getting in their little groups. So when it comes to school, oh, God, the kids get an incredible blend. So,
whereas where you are in North Carolina, it's, Protestant?
Well, it's Southerners and some New Yorkers, and that's about
right.
it. It's just half white, half black. No Chinese, not the, South Americans, not the North American Indians, that kind of thing.
Okay, I don't know if this is confidential, Jermaine. There's the issue of a black person in your world. Give me the initial that is of the sisters that's involved with that. Not involved. Know somebody who's involved. I'm just trying to confuse a bit. You know what I mean?
No, but it's probably confidential.
Right. The thing is, one of your sisters knows somebody. Right? You don't want to say?
Yeah.
Is that secret?
Yeah, we don't like to.
Okay. All right.
But where were you going with this? With not, it's...
What I want, where am I going to go for it? Greg, the fact that Ion is known in Hollywood because of someone around the Renners.
Oh, what did you say? Ion is in Hollywood.
You know what I mean, don't you, Jermaine?
I think Jermaine's confused. Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah.
This is the connection. At least 3 years ago, I think a lot of Hollywood people know about us now, but 3 years ago, this was the connection, Greg.
Okay. Interesting, Bob.
So we have, you know, these four sisters, and of course we all love the one in Costa Rica. She's probably really unique. Anybody who's kicked out of family is the charismatic one, the black sheep, so we want to get to know the fifth one. What's up with her? She's not even hanging out with the tribe. She probably is a super individual.
Didn't make it to America.
I think it'll be very. They have a charisma in their faces that could become something. And but you're probably on your way, and nobody is doing RNA drops like you guys. This is very unique. You guys are like being genetically engineered by the RNA drops to some new kind of mutant.
Yeah, you're probably
the whole family.
Yeah. So isn't that neat, Greg?
Yes, I think it's excellent. And keep it in mind that the Evergreens were emphatic when they said all mutation is beneficial.
Right. Greg was involved with the Evergreens from 1976 till 2004. I got involved with the Evergreens from 1980 to 2004. And Greg was turned on to Ion through another major person in the Evergreens movement.
Okay.
Yeah, the person who had probably, how many sessions did he claim to
have? He had 500 sessions. He had employees who had 500 sessions, and they always let him listen to theirs. And then he had 500 public sessions. So he's listened to 1,500 sessions.
Wow.
He's a very good friend of Michael's. They're very, very close.
Right, and he listened to my sessions and made a digital copy. So he actually knows he knows my stuff, which is pretty unique.
And he gave you a bunch of his stuff, too.
Yes, we made a nice trade, and his stuff is very good.
Yeah. And unlike Bob, this person is still stuck in Evergreen's way of thinking. And this person was a good friend of mine. He was the best man at my wedding, and I let him listen to the first five sessions. So he got to hear some good raw Ion pulling me out of the subconscious mind and the disconnection and the duality that it created in me. And still, he appreciates and respects Ion, but can't budge out of his
the concepts he got from the Evergreens.
The loyalty of the concepts he got to the Evergreens,
And so this is very slow, carefully said. This is 20 years ago. It's a slower time back there, and it's very interesting stuff. But Ion is on a whole more up-to-date, speedy level.
Ion's doing the 2-minute mile or the 1-minute mile.
Yeah, and the Evergreens are the 4-minute mile. They were fantastic for doing that. They were unique. And when you get a nice, clear recording, it's a very resonant voice, but their concepts are not as far as the Ion though the people who were clients of the evergreens, if they'd known Ionic perspectives, they might have gotten more out of the evergreens. Mm-hmm. Just that people didn't know anything 25, 30 years ago to draw more out of it. So, how are we doing? So you guys have been here for
2 hours.
Well, 4:30, 2.5 hours almost.
Woo!
Right,
yay.
That's good.
2.5 hours. And,
right.
And we're going to go eat now, though.
Right. Yes, it's 10 to 9. So, no, I'm glad. I think we have other people coming in, and we can't be going on with you guys that, you know, indefinitely. But you guys have been tremendous. You definitely are probably the most interesting and popular guest so far. What do you say, Greg? Did you hear it all, Greg? Were you here for the whole time?
I heard 3/4 of it. It was excellent. It was nice to hear you, these young ladies' perspective on and, you know, just the bonding and sisterhood. It was real pleasant. I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you guys. You guys are
a great family. And Dave, are you still with us? Do you want to say anything?
Oh, and my heart goes out to your father.
Everyone says that Cliff is a man. He's a man to put up with all of us.
But no, Greg, they don't call him father. They call him Cliff.
Oh, yeah, Cliff is our dad.
Cliff is our dad.
Very cool. Well, he's surrounded by a lot of hormones, and he sounds like an awesome guy. And for him to, you know, make you all such special people, you know, I've always said that, you know, it's the father who shows the daughter what's the first love affair, you know, and being a father myself of a daughter, it's like nothing ever you would experience. The love of a daughter is just totally different. Totally different. So, my kudos to that man. Good for him.
We'll let him know. Thank you, Bob, for having us. And I really think I've always told myself about you and Carolyn and Ion and, like, how great you guys are. And when I try to explain people about you guys, I just started calling you guys my godparents or my uncle and my auntie because I don't know what else to say.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Thank you. Yeah, auntie, you. Carolyn, and Uncle Bob. And it was very, this is Nadia talking now. It was very nice meeting all of you guys. Thank you for having us on your show. This has been fun and inspiring too. I can't wait until you guys do your last hour and beat the record. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Great. Yeah, come over to Maui, you guys. Come over and hang out with us.
Yeah,
I would love to.
We'll plan a trip and go out there. We'll try to have this we'll try to call tomorrow again. Yeah, we could try and call in every.
Okay.
Excellent.
Good idea.
If we ever go to visit you, we'll bring Kim too. She was missing today.
Okay, for sure. Say hi to her for us. Tell her we missed her.
We will. Bob, I might have a Playboy topic tomorrow.
Okay, I'll be ready for it. Yeah, I'd like to get really intimately probed by you.
I think that should be fun.
Just a minute. I had to give the phone to Carolyn. What'd you say? What was the last sentence after I said probe?
Nadia, what did you say?
I just said it's going to be fun.
Yes, okay. So, you know, I'm up here all night. You guys could come and call in at midnight your time, which would be just 10 in the afternoon. You call 2 in the morning anytime you want. I'm here constantly anyways.
Okay.
If I'm having a hard time going to bed, I will definitely call back.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to eat, and then we'll probably call you back.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, Jermaine, give all your sisters my email, you know, purple@5body, and they can email me personally one-on-one, or you can tell me they're coming in or whatever, right?
Okay, I'll do that. So that means you want to be our counselor? You're going to go crazy, Uncle Bob.
Yes, I'm going to be, what did you say, counselor?
She called you Uncle Bob.
I said you're going to go crazy.
Counselor, maybe.
If we start emailing all of us. Yeah.
No, I can handle it. You know, I don't mind being an uncle. I'll be getting some perks, but we'll discuss that later. Well, I guess, Greg, you failed to make the cut, Greg. You didn't get
called. Well, I mean, you will get some perks. You get, like, a little gift card from time to time. You get a little for Christmas.
Yes.
I mean,
the family photo. I will get the family photo every year.
And you should see those.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine with your mother's involvement. It's going to be pretty risque. We know that. Because your mother's going to... You guys are aging, and she's going the other direction. She's going to become a little kid in relation to you guys. A wild, wild, crazy chick. So she'll keep you young. She's going to keep you guys young.
Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, she will.
Yeah. Bob's your uncle. Do you know that phrase, Bob's your uncle? No, that's a phrase. You know, in English culture, that's a phrase. Bob's your uncle, so yes, you can.
You don't get it, but now we call you Uncle Bob.
That's right, Uncle Bob. And when they start filming you, you guys say, "Did Uncle Bob say send some more drops? Okay, I want to get some embeds in there."
Yeah,
I'm the mystery guy.
Your Uncle Bob and Carolyn's Auntie Carolyn.
Auntie Carolyn, that's right. It's awesome. Sorry, Greg, you didn't make it. You have to find another family, Greg. Greg didn't make the cut.
I'm pretty sure somebody's adopting out there.
Yep. But Greg's got a family. We hardly have a family. We got two foster kids, and we hear from them every couple of years, and, you know, we just remain young. That's how we do it. We say, well, we're not going to be parents, so let's stay young. We'll be kids.
Well, you got us now.
Yes, we do have you. So this has been fantastic and way beyond my wildest imaginations and dreams. You guys have been perfect. And you might want to excerpt this, Nadia, and play it on your show.
I was actually thinking you just inspired me to bring these crazy girls back on my show.
Yeah. Do it.
It's just good. I just have a hard time getting these girls up early in the morning to be ready and have this type of energy.
That's right. You got to go down there at 5 or so, 4:30.
Yeah. My show starts at 7 in the morning, so I'm usually in the studio by 6.
So that means you get up at 5?
4.
Wow. 4. Mm-hmm. So you go to bed at 9 or 10?
10.
So that's 10, that's 6 hours sleep. That's good enough.
Yeah, not when we go out and party, though.
No. And as you get as the drops take more effect, you should be able to diminish your hours of sleep.
You think so?
Yeah, that's what happened to me.
Sometimes I feel really tired, like, during the day, especially, like, around 2, 3 o'clock. That's when, like, I get really tired.
Well, take some drops at that point.
Take them twice a day, right?
Yeah. Take them 3 times a day. You're taking them long enough. But I used to sleep 6 hours in New York. I came to Maui in 2008, and then I went 5 hours. But once I got on the RNA drops, I went down to 3 hours sleep a night.
That's great. I'm going to start doing that because I can be more productive if I take them during the afternoon.
Yeah,
Bob,
I would
do that.
I don't mind sleeping because that's where the magic happens for me.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you're not here, Jermaine. You know, you're in other worlds all the time. And this is what you learn from Mayan. Nobody has ever slept in terms of becoming conscious. You go to another world. The body requires you to leave this world. You need to check out what you're involved in and go to another world. That's what sleep is. And if you wake up tired, it's just means you've been very busy in another world.
Yeah. I'll tell you this story. I just feel like we're never going to leave, but I'll tell you a quick story before I leave.
It's all right.
I don't know why, but like kind of like right after I started taking the RNA drops, when I would sleep on the left-hand side of my bed, and it would only happen on the left-hand side, I would go to different places and interact with different places, but because it was so new to me, I would get scared. So I made sure to stay on the right side of the bed. Once I started getting more comfortable and I was understanding what was going on with my dreams, I was able to, like, really just then now don't know where if I'm dreaming or if it's really happening.
Right, and you don't, doesn't matter which side you're on, sleeping on.
No, it doesn't matter. Now it's just if I'm sleeping, I can interact and just be okay.
Right. You can look at that left side as maybe a portal. You're sleeping right beside a portal and going through there. That's why it's more active.
That's exactly how it felt.
Yeah. Well, you guys are a pretty psychic family, pretty anomalous family, pretty unpredictable, pretty... Well, you're pretty, right? Pretty. So anybody who's an uncle, well, how do I say that? Any...